to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Action Giants. I'm Tom Howley. He's Mr. Matt Wilbur on the board. SP Futures up 8. We have a rare Monday treat today. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. I think we did have you on Monday before, but it's good to have you back. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Hey, I was reading this thing on Saturday regarding the top honchos for the new stadium at, well, the refurbished stadium in Alabama. $5 million was the ticket. And I go down to the K's and I see Carl Denninger, first name, you know, you didn't even put it by the D's, they put it with the K. You pointed up $5 million from that?
No.
All right. must have been a different Carl. You must have an evil twin somewhere or something. I'm just kidding, but $5 million, I wonder
why. Well, that wouldn't surprise me, actually, but, you know.
So, I mean, what the... What do you suppose the is that what the nut is? I often wondered what the high end box was. They kept dunning me from Notre Dame. They kept calling me saying, "Are you sure you don't want a skybox?" Yeah, I'm sure. Good Lord, I mean, what is the deal with this? And then my man,
I don't know anymore. I mean, when I used to run my internet company, we got quote unquote invited. Of course, you know what the deal is there. Yeah. They're trying to sell you something, right, by various vendors and stuff. But I was perfectly happy to have somebody else buy my tickets into the game and buy all my booze while I was there too.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's I was. I wonder if there's a. I'm actually a few years ago, maybe nine. Well, mostly more than a few. I actually tried to total up how much these guys had spent in the last 15, 20 years at just like the top 50 universities and new. Everybody went to like 100,000 people. I mean, even the list of. How much money they were putting in there. I mean, Texas A&M and Tennessee, and there isn't a place now that doesn't have spectacular digs. And the total amount of money was unreal. And now, this weekend, well, my knucklehead buddies from Notre Dame, the Irish finally didn't have their sellout on Saturday, right? So, but they got this streak. But it's amazing what you can do with a streak. It reminded me of the Fed saying there's no inflation. Like, for a while, there's... You know what the, what do they call it? There's a term for it. The, sell out where if you just have one seats around, they don't consider those things, saleable. Virtual, there's a virtual sellout. So they have the virtual sellout.
Oh, yeah, I don't know exactly how that works, but yeah.
And then now they had some alumni that would buy up, why anybody would ever do this, would buy up extra tickets and like give them away or something. Well, now I finally got to like 3,000 people. Alumni said, we're out. Right by like 3,000 tickets. But evidently, Oklahoma had a big game on Saturday and they had 3,000 people short, supposedly, too. I don't think any of these guys are selling out. You know, the investment and all this stuff is pretty dramatic. But, you know, not new to you and me, huh, Carl? People make these kind of decisions.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
What did you make of that article that I sent you on Friday? I don't know if we tweeted that one out or not. Maddie, I sent it to you, I believe. The young lady who was basically tried to put numbers, what you and I have been talking about forever, about the... And, you know, and you can, I'm sure if you wanted to, you go through the article and say, this. Basically, it's about good jobs versus bad jobs. Right, Carl?
Right.
And I don't know if I would absolutely have made the cutoff where she did, but it almost doesn't matter, right? It's the trend. So no matter where you put the cutoff, she's right. I mean, do you have any big issues with it? She was saying that virtually, she got this huge graph here, the last however many years and how many jobs that are on the lower end. And I just think that it's incredible how it reminds me of when my significant other and I would have discussions back in 2006 about owning property. And how I was reading this thing where 85% of the people in the country could not afford a home. at that rate, even if you gave them the 20 grand to put down. And that was before the property tax went up to where they are now. And they're just there's like a collision of numbers there, Kyle, which you and I are always talking about. And, you know, it's just hard to even, you and I never know when it's going to actually happen, but it just gets to the point where, you know, you can't trade on it, especially with our timing, or maybe yours is better than mine, but you just get to this point where you wonder, why do people think that everybody's okay? And when they're obviously not. And is that just the story?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that has bothered me for a long time about the so-called reporting that we have, you know, in this country today. And, you know, the cheerleading that goes on within the both the media and the political side of things. There's no analysis. And as I've pointed out, oh, good Lord, it's been going on for 20 years now. And especially coming out of the 2008 crash, the job quality has been terrible. I mean, when you look at who's actually gained, where the gains have come from, it hasn't been from people that have gone to college. It's all been people that don't even have high school diplomas in many cases. And that's what the numbers say. I don't care what people want to believe. Those are the numbers. And so, you know, you look at that and you go, well, okay, so people have jobs, but to a large degree, this is forced by government policy. This is what happens when you offshore manufacturing. You destroyed what used to be a reliable, good, blue-collar job. It's gone. They don't exist in the United States anymore. And yet, you know, rah, 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 your underwear is 50 cents cheaper at Walmart.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's literally what's going on there. There was just a thing. There's this school video that just hit a couple of days ago. It's on YouTube from REI, the guys that sell outdoor equipment. Okay, basically, you know, Mother Earth is dying. We're poisoning the planet with plastics. Yada yada yada. Okay, fine. Essentially, all of that pollution is coming from five of the top six countries where they buy their products from, starting with China. And yet, here they are telling us how terrible they are, that, you know, we are as humans, right? And yet, darn near every piece of private labeled merchandise that they sell is coming from one of the top five countries that's doing the polluting.
Well, but it's out of sight, out of mind. I mean, that's right.
Well, but the thing is, they're profiting from this. You know, this is it. It's one thing to go ahead and do it and say, well, you know, it's just how it is. You want your, you know, you want your pants to be $30 instead of $35, right? Because that's, you know, you don't want to pay $35 for jeans or $50 for jeans. You want to pay $30 for jeans. Okay, so we're going to make them in Bangladesh, or we're going to make them in China or whatever. We're going to make your Nikes in China so that Nike can have a sky high stock price, but the shoes are still $150. All right, and the thing is, all right, fine. But then to turn around and scold your customers that you want to buy your stuff, well, you yourself are the reason that it's happening, is crazy.
Well, it's not all that crazy. It's just nuts.
I mean, where's the intelligence behind any of this? And you know what the worst part of it is? The people in this country are so... they are so sleepy when it comes to actually paying attention. They're going to laugh this up.
Well, yeah, it's not, I somehow don't get how it all comes down the line. Why do people who have the money and are doing this stuff, why do they have to either make sure other people, and most rich people spend all day telling poor people how well off they are? do you need to feel that way, or else you feel guilty being rich, or what? Why not just...
Well, I think there's some of that, but you know, one of the other things is now the latest and greatest is, you know, if you give money away, you have to make sure you do it in public, and it's all over Twitter.
Oh yeah, well, if I don't have to give it away, nobody'd ever know where I was giving it. Why would I want anybody to know?
Well, you know, but the thing is this. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're religious or not, but if you are, you might want to go read some Matthew.
I probably read it, but years and years ago. What does Matthew say?
Matthew 6, Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven.
I like that one. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, so when you do give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets.
Well, you also need to make sure you get a tax deduction.
Well, yeah, you know, there's that too. And then there's, you know, and then there's the other side of this, which is in the 1930s, the Boy Scouts were gifted this huge ranch. Okay, this absolutely enormous piece of property in New Mexico. And they've now mortgaged it. And it supposedly was a restricted donation.
Oh, because they didn't want any women there? Or something like that?
Well, no. This is, you know, because they got in trouble with all of their abuse scandals. So, you know, after we get done diddling the little boys, then, you know, we're going to take the restricted stuff and we're going to mortgage it to secure the insurance that we need to stay operating. And so the lesson from this is, don't give things to people who can abuse them later. And unfortunately, that means don't give anything durable to anybody.
And that's the truth. They had this lady, I went to, believe it or not, I was invited to and went to a couple of these APEC things. You ever been to one of those? The Jewish lobbying group? I mean, the serious lobbying.
No, I fortunately missed that.
You know what? Well, I think, Carl, you were someone like me. Don't take that bad, but wherever you go, you end up learning something. And these guys are the consummate lobbyists. And you get the feeling as they went through the discussion about actually how hard it is to really lobby. You know, effectively. Because they had, they were talking about, if you get elected to be, even a rep, you know, even a rep, I mean, a rep's obviously a big time thing. Somewhere in your first 2 years, they're going to invite you to Israel. Maybe, I don't know if it's the first two, but they would say, I mean, everybody, even, you know, people I know closely would say, man, you know, you got to have term limits. These guys are there forever. This guy says, there's been a bigger, more turnover in the House than there ever has been. He goes, we're taking people, you know, some of these districts, they're in 10 years, there's five different people. We're hauling every one of them over to Israel. You know, so don't tell us that there's no turnover. There sure as hell is. But anyway, as the big speaker, they bring in this African American kind of preacher lady she was from Detroit, and she had a voice, Carl. I don't think they need to mic her. They needed to mic her. I mean, you could tell that she was used to, you know, speaking in churches that didn't like have a microphone. I mean, talk about lungs. And she starts talking about giving money, and the greatest line was, "Give until it really hurts. That's why they call it a sacrifice and not a donation." I thought, what a spectacular line. That's why it's a sacrifice and not just a donation. I mean, well, you know.
Just this kind of stuff, it's insane. And yet, you know, when you look back at the reality of what's going on now within the markets and, you know, and everything else, you know, we have a president that's essentially looks at the stock market as a referendum. You know, that's the vote on whether or not he's doing a good job, right? Is whether or not the market goes up, the market goes down. And so that's it. And the problem with that is that there is one time-honored way that always works to make the market go up for a decent amount of time, and that is to deficit spend money you don't have. And it works the same way in your household right up until your credit card gets cut off. And so, you know, he's not stupid. He's run this game, Trump's run this game for, you know, forever in the property development business. And, you know, leverage other people's money. If it blows up in your face, oh well, you know, you put four LLCs together in a chain so that they can't come after you personally and you go on to another deal. So, you know, but people like that, I mean, there's a guy down here that has done a lot of development down here in Florida. It's basically the same deal. He's, you know, he's got every one of these things that he does. Project is in a different LLC. And if one of them goes bad on him at some point, oh well, so sorry, so sad, bye. And it's just like, what kind of a world have we built when the average person is subjected to all the monopolist pressures from healthcare in particular, And then, you know, and then insurance and property taxes, everything else that go on top of this, because of course we have all these scolds in the teachers' unions, everywhere else, they have to have that, and by God, they can't pay for any of it themselves.
No.
And so anyone that can cost shift it, they will cost shift it, and it shows up right on your balance sheet. And then we say, oh, but everybody's got a job. Yeah, but what you're not saying is, it's 29 hours a week, so you don't have to pay any benefits, and you're pulling coffee at Starbucks.
Well, that was like the thrust of this article. It's not even the hourly wage. It's the hourly wage times the amount of hours per week, and that's what's rapid.
Right, and that's the thing, is that when you look at the data, this is what the data keeps telling you, is that this is what's going on.
I don't, when all I was giving Dr. Jason grief last night, he came over for dinner. Me and his lovely retired judge, Brad. She was 20 years, girl. She retired from the judging, and, good for her. I mean, she put in a terrific reputation, and everybody said she did a nice job, and she basically said 20 years was enough, and I, good for her. And anyway, I was, it's funny when you mention the deficit financing, but if you actually did a Keynesian deal, totally without monetary help, you don't, I mean, nobody's ever done that here. It's not just, I mean, this year, if they were to take their $1 trillion, I'm going to ask you, what do you think would happen if the Fed basically said, we're not helping at all? We're not throwing anything on the balance sheet. It's all on you. We're growing the money supply at 3%. If you want to go out and borrow $1 trillion from the population and the rest of the world, if they're dumb enough to give it to you, it's on you. I mean, they really never do that. It's not, when you say a deficit, or even other people, you know, on TV talking about, you know, why don't we have an infrastructure plan, or why don't we do this? There's no such thing, really. I mean, I'm just surprised. This is not that tough of an economic. This is not grad student stuff. This is undergrad stuff. Well, where are you getting the money? I mean, normally you'd go out and borrow it, right? They're not borrowing.
Right.
Well, they are borrowing it, but they got another arm of government, even though they claim they're not. The Fed running right in and saying, we'll come and grab it. We'll make up the money and grab it. Like this lady who's allegedly going to be the new, she's for the Board of Governors, but she keeps talking out so much that I don't think she's going to make it. What's her name? Brunette lady. She's very bright, but she's talking about the Fed shouldn't be independent and people are all outraged. Does anybody think the Fed is really independent? I mean, what would they, in terms of what they do, we had this big discussion yesterday with, actually, John's wife and everybody were saying, you know, are they really independent? Well, the fact is, 95% of what they do, like anything else, we couldn't do without. You know, the making sure everything settles properly overseas, here, every check. I mean, without them, I don't know how we would operate. So, I mean, taking that out, if you go to the 5% of the stuff that's actual policy, the whole thought that they would not even begin to help, I mean, they're creating a dough. But because the way it's done, even the Trump lovers would not give the man the power to just make money up and spend it. I mean, you wouldn't give that right to Caesar, for God's sake. But by doing this two-step process, they're getting to the same place. Why is that not explained in the bazillion places that we have national, you know, commentary and radio and even articles? I mean, that article I've yet to read. I mean, this year,
because there'd be a revolution by morning. I mean, there literally would. If you went and you told people, if you actually went out and you told people the truth, which I've published this in articles a bunch of times. Nobody ever wants to hear it. There's some of the worst read ones. They're about as poorly read in terms of circulation as the ones I do on the employment report, which are probably some of the most important in terms of what's really going on in the world. Right.
Right.
And yet those are reliably, when I look at my own internal statistic, they have the worst circulation of anything I do. But you know, it is what it is. But no, if you actually told people, look, here's the reality: the government is taking in $75 in taxes and spending $100. Okay, and this every year means that your purchasing power, what a dollar of money that you earn can buy, goes down by about 5 to 6%, because that's just the math.
Right.
If you know, that's just, it's arithmetic. It
I don't care what someone tells you. That's arithmetic. Now, what's supposed to happen is that as technology advances, as productivity improves, which is, that's what productivity is. It's being able to do more with less. As that happens, what's supposed to occur is you're supposed to get 2 or 3% more purchasing power for every dollar you have every year. Now, you take those two things and you put them together, and that means that you're getting screwed out of half of what you should have about every 10 years. I mean, how long would it take for the guns to come out if people actually understood that and it was drummed into their head? This is what the government is doing, and they're doing it on purpose. It's not an accident. It's intentional.
Well, absolutely it's intentional. And I don't, but it's stunning to me. It's one of the reasons why I love what I do so much in terms of the market, because it, most of the information, good and bad, no matter which way things are, is sitting right there. And this is what...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I started in the business, Carl, I don't know how long you've been around. I'm not accusing you of being as old as me, but I started in 1980 when the market was, I'm going to say, 800, something like that, 8.25. And interest rates were... Well, I remember the 30-year bond that traded the Board of Trade, the signature bond was an 8.5% coupon.
Right.
And I think the low tick was 67. So where does that put it? 12.5%? This is 30-year. The curve was very inverted. So near term, what's the most you ever got in a bank? I think the Robin, who had, you know, she was a treasurer at Pullman. I was just an analyst, had more money. I think she got 15.8 for a 6-month CD at the dear departed Continental Bank. I mean, I remember my mom, you always got like 2% more than inflation. So you never actually, never lost dough on the deal if you had cash. Unlike now, where you absolutely are, I mean, if you have money, you're just getting drained every year. And you got other people in like high positions, like maybe president, ranting and raving about it should be negative. Like you should actually have to pay the government to spend your money. I mean, the whole logic of it, but somehow if it becomes part of the vernacular. It's almost like, you know, you should pee into the wind. Well, why would anybody do that? Well, because that's what we all do now. Okay, well then that's.
It's nuts when you think about it. Because here's the thing that I don't understand. I don't understand why the people of this country put up with it. Or anywhere else, any other nation. I have no clue why people put up with it. Because when you think about this, think about the common person. You run the math on this. Every single common person in the country gets trashed over their lifetime.
Yeah.
All right. And yet, you have Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, okay, who has seen from 2013, when I had that marker, 2013 to today, her net worth has gone from $25 million to over $125.
Now, where did she get that?
On a $200,000 a year salary. Now, how do you do that without being so corrupt that you ought to be spending the rest of your days rotting in a prison cell?
I don't think it. I don't know. Do people just. Why did we come out of the Depression, Carl? But I think one of the big reasons is unlike now, I think we had a leader who actually felt. I mean, he didn't. People thought that he had the way out or something. I mean, or they stuck with Roosevelt, I guess. I don't know why, but why do people, I mean, if you, with all the stuff that goes by people, obviously sports is the opiate of the people now, or something. But why, for instance, if something, with all the tweets that go out, some of the stuff that you say, you would think that one of the things we did on the show someday, when I have a good day and actually give a good economic thing and have somebody like you helping me out, Why doesn't that become something that, wow, this is something you got to listen to? It just never does.
It doesn't. And you know what? But you know what happens during the, you look at the longer cycles on this, okay? Because, human things tend to go in cycles. When you learn a lesson and then all the people who learned it die, you get to learn it again.
Well, that's, okay. Well, I mean, it's
all right.
What I'm saying, the news when I came into the business was, I don't know as much, didn't know as much about economics then as I do now, but this is unsustainable. Either we're going under, all these stocks are going under, or the ones that are managing to at least make some dough here. With interest rates here, one of these days these rates are going to go the other way, and yet for years, we just stayed there. Interest rates were high. You would thought it got to the point where it became so institutionalized. Unions had clauses in their contracts and stuff that they were just they were going to get immediate raises with CPI and stuff. I mean, it actually became part of the world until all of a sudden one day it's almost like now. How many young people? Why should I get interest in a bank? Why should not only I give them my money, but then they charge me for an ATM fee or something, or if I don't have $5,000, they charge me 50. I mean, the fact that people put up with that, they sort of just get used to it, Carl. It's like if you walk down the street and the same guy comes out and slaps you on the head every day. After about 40 days, I guess, it's just part of walking to work. You forget to hit back or something. I don't know. I mean, it's not the first time.
I have no idea. All I know is that when there was, so the, in the period of time leading up to the Depression,
hold that thought after break, right. Can you, Carl? S&P futures up 6, Dow futures up 67, NASDAQ futures up 24. Uber stripped of its London license. Wow. I've never been to London. I've never taken an Uber, so I don't know if that affects me all that much. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lord, don't face Stocks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow's Mr. Ben Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Benninger on the phone. S&P futures up 6.25. NASDAQ futures up 24.25. The Dow is up 65. Make that 69. It was up 65. Now it's up 69. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 56.4%. FTSE up 66.9%. CAC around up 20.3%. So CAC around lagging a little bit. Again, we got a holiday week this week, and holiday weeks, well, tend to want to slide up a little bit because last year, the first day of the year, I think, was Christmas Eve, which I've never seen before and probably will never see again, hopefully. Nikkei up 179.8%, Shanghai up 20.7%, Hang Seng up 397.1%. Hang Seng is made back, I'm going to say at least half of what they lost early last week and the week before. A part of this is, I guess, there were all the demonstrators stood down during the election, which I'll talk to Carl about in a second, but it's pretty interesting. 10-year yield 1.78, so it's kind of stuck at this number now. One minus 0.35. Japan minus 0.09. So they were all moving up, and now they've pretty much stopped. Gold down 660, 1457, lowest in a while. The trade deal optimism continues, and we'll have pessimism at some point today or tomorrow. What do we do for news when this thing finally gets done or doesn't get done or something? Copper, however, 265, can't get out of its own way. Oil down 8 cents, 57.69, briefly over $58, I think, on Friday. Brent, 63.68, natural gas, 257, down 8 cents, which is a pretty big move in there. As we start to get a little milder here, our cold snap, thank God, is not hanging in there. RBOB, 166, at gas, 259, Maddie, take that yesterday. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues to report already this morning on our area expressways, roadways, and tollways. I-94 westbound just before Sibley Boulevard. There's an accident that's been moved to the right shoulder, so keep that in mind. And that's causing stop-and-go traffic on the inbound I-94 on the south side. Southwest of there, 80 eastbound just before 183rd Street, there is a crash. No issues coming in on the Stevenson. Eisenhower looks good too. Same for the Kennedy and Edens. No traffic buildup or accidents or issues yet, so that's good news. We do have an issue up in Rogers Park, Rogers Avenue between Walcott and Clark. A vehicle hit a gas meter, and that has Rogers Avenue closed due to a level one hazmat situation that happened this morning. So crews are on the scene looking to get that resolved. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a very nice, mild, late November day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 52. Right now it's mostly clear and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 70 today. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, the Bears built a 19-7 lead and then held on to beat the Giants 19-14 yesterday at Soldier Field. Mitchell Trubisky was up and down, 25 of 41, 278 yards, a passing touchdown and a rushing touchdown, so that was the good part. The bad part is he threw two interceptions, one of them in the end zone. Bears also had some bad penalties that called back some big plays and missed an extra point. That was a 48-yard attempt after a couple of penalties and after a successful two-point conversion was called back. No running game to speak of, but Khalil Mack played well. He had a strip sack and three tackles in the win. Bears are now 5-6 on the season. Sunday Night Football, it was the 49ers blowing out the Packers 37-8 last night. NBA hoops, Bulls were off. They'll host the Trailblazers tonight at 7 p.m. Suns lost to the Nuggets 116-104. In hockey, Coyotes lost to the Oilers 4-3 in a shootout. And in college hoops, both Arizona teams were in action. Arizona blew out Long Beach State 104-67. Arizona State lost to defending national champion Virginia in a close one 48-45.
The Ball's still hanging in there, eh?
Undefeated. I think they're 6-0.
I know you have to finish your thought here, but I have a question for you. Of course, I think up stuff on the break, so whenever I tell people hold their thought, I never follow through. I don't think that's all that good radio, but hey, you know these people, when I say these people, these upper-end dudes more than I do. I mean, even though I had Dr. J over for dinner last night, and he's upper-end dude, I guess, in my mind. He's just Dr. J, you think, Manny? He's just Dr. J, our softball buddy. He alleges he wants to play again this summer.
Really?
Yeah.
He's had, what, 2 years off or 1 year off?
Yeah, yeah. But he looks in good shape. He always is.
Yeah.
Anyway, what happens mentally, Carl, to a Jerome Powell and even the other people either in the governmental area or people on TV when you ask them even a direct question about inflation or something, instead of actually outpeeping what you and I, you know, try and tell the truth, what causes people all of a sudden to just, you know, suck it up and give the party line? I mean, you see corporations doing it all the time, and I mean, people that work for corporate, I mean, they look and see what they're supposed to say before. I don't know how you get there. I mean, I guess if the more money you're making doing it, or more prestige the position has, I guess you're more likely to. I mean, look at the difference on, even if you watch CNBC all the time, the guys that are like the former Fed governors or the former this or the former that, former regulator, all of a sudden they talk like you and me. What do they do when they're in the job? Do you have to take the veil or what?
You know, I really don't know. One of the things I think that you have as a challenge is that when you get into a position like that, if you blow the lid off of it, then what you've essentially done is not just indict yourself, you've indicted all your predecessors. So, you know, to say, well, you know, gee, how come a dollar is today is, you know, 6 cents of what it was,
yeah,
60 years ago, right? And you know, you make a statement like that, though, and then wait a minute, that means Yellen, Bernanke, you go back down the list, you know,
yep.
Burns, everybody, all these other guys, and when you get to the end of it, basically what you're saying is, well, they all robbed you. And oh, by the way, you should have built a gallows in the middle of the National Mall, surrounded the Equities building, and said, you know, all right, out, one at a time. You should have done it 50 years ago. But you didn't, and, you know, but I'm going to admit to all the sins of all these people, including, by the way, myself. That's kind of what you end up with, and I think that's part of the reason it doesn't happen. But we're supposed to have a media, the entire purpose of the First Amendment is for this stuff to get out into the public and to be discussed and to have that public debate. It's the reason it exists. It's the reason the First Amendment is first, and the Second Amendment is for when the First Amendment doesn't work. The problem you have, though, take a look at what came out over the weekend. Okay, Bloomberg News announces they're not going to do stories. They're not going to do investigative reporting on Michael Bloomberg. Gee, big shock, right? Because
yeah,
he declared he's running for president. They also said they're not going to do any more investigative stories on any of his rivals for the Democrat nomination. Now, they'll be more than happy to do them on Trump, but they won't do them on any of the other people running for the Democrat nomination. And that was like, yeah, okay, this is big shock, right? But buried in the story was, and you know, boy, you gotta give these guys credit for bearing the lead. In the memo to their employees, they said, we have long had a policy
that we will not do investigative reporting on our rivals in the financial reporting sector, including Reuters and CNBC.
Interesting.
Now think about this. If you actually, you know, when I used to run my internet company, I wouldn't go have a beer with one of my competitors. Okay? And it wasn't just because I was afraid that somebody was going to come after me with an antitrust case. It was also because I really was trying to pound them over the head every day. That was the whole point, right? Is to kill them and get their customer base. Well, I mean, that's what competition is. You're out there, you're trying to get the other guy. Excuse me? You just in print admitted that you're colluding with all the other financial media?
Well, I mean, we were on the board of the SIBO, and there was four exchanges, right? The Philly, the MX, us, and the Pecos. You would never even, the thought of Bill Flourish calling up his counterpart on the MX just to talk, would there wasn't an attorney on earth that would let him do that. You can't do that.
Right.
I mean, the only way you could talk to one of these guys was at a SEC-sanctioned event or something where they'll talk about, you know, industry issues or something. But I don't, the thought that Janet Yellen or these people don't know what we're talking about, to me, is so outrageous. I mean, when Powell told everybody not to look at the money supply numbers or the balance sheet numbers, he can't really mean that. He doesn't want anybody to look at it because he doesn't want to be questioned about it, I guess. I mean, there's some...
Right.
I mean, there's no... But who exactly... Who gets somebody of that level? And I don't know, on a personal level, whether there's, you know, there's spineless or, you know, jellyfish or what they are. I don't know, but... I mean, who can tell somebody, look, I know you're the number one economist in the world or number two or three or four. I want you growing the money supply 9%. Well, that's pretty crazy. I didn't ask you whether it was crazy or not. I asked you to do it. I mean, who are the people that are making these calls? Is it just they're so – I think they're paranoid about asset prices going down because it's the only thing they got going for them in this economy, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's exactly right. But the thing is you have both houses of Congress they've been running these 25% fiscal deficits now for, oh crap, it's been over 10 years. All right? And it's been every single year. And you look at this, you go, this is lunacy. And yet, this is what's going on. And then, you know, everyone says, well, you know, look, Keynesianism, it works. Look at the price of the stock market. And what they leave out is that what Keynes actually said is that you spend in deficit during recessions as a counterbalance, but during good times you're supposed to raise taxes and run a surplus.
Well, right, but we don't do that, any of that. I mean, it's
well, that never happens. Right?
But if you don't have the monetary group, well, I'll use the term helping out. The only thing you gain, Carl, is you bring consumption further up, because there was a time when people say, "Hey, John, you're here, I guess."
Morning, Tom. Morning, Carl.
We have the only thing you gain. We just drop Carl. He'll call back. Well, I was saying, John, I'm trying to finish a thought here. The only thing you gain if you actually look at, you know, Keynesian economics is everybody doesn't. We don't necessarily define this stuff. But if we're Carl, I'm just saying, but this is not that difficult. We have people that are on TV that are supposedly experts. Right, and the only thing you gain with Keynesian economics, when I say economics, policy, is if people save 20%, which is what people used to do, which, of course, I don't think most people do now. The only thing you gain if you go out and borrow money from them is you can pull that 20% forward. In other words, you're going to spend it today.
Right.
You're going to steal from the investment side, because savings equals investment, right? I mean, I don't know if anybody even knows that identity anymore, but the amount people save is the amount people can invest, because that's what you're investing, is other people's savings, right? That's why the whole banking system's there. That's why the stock market's there. That's why the bond market's there, correct? To make that identity the way it's supposed to be. Now, how many people even know that? I don't know. But anybody who takes an economics course should know. But all you do is drag that forward if the Fed does not help out. But in this case, the Fed is essentially saying, oh, we're going to print 3/4 of the deficit. Well, that's a whole different brand of ball. That's now monetary policy. You can't get away from it. Because if they didn't help at all, if every single dime that you and John Flanagan wanted to spend, you had to go out and borrow it from Maddie Weber. All you do is take it out of one pocket and put it in another. And all you gain is that the 2 cents that Maddie would have put in the bank, you're not putting in the bank because you spent everything you get. That's what governments do. So, but, I mean, the definitions are even, why can't you just get, at least get the definition out there for people to understand? Because you're afraid they might look at it and go, wait a minute, that's not what we're doing. Or the whole mechanism of communication, so many things now, I mean, if you're peeing behind your house, somebody's going to take your picture and it goes viral. I mean, something that nobody cares about people and about the right. News. You know, all the stuff that actually means a lot, like an entire society not being able to afford a house and this moving faster than another. All of a sudden, either nobody cares, nobody prints it, people avoid printing it. I don't, you know, meanwhile, Craigslist in town here, some kid 14 years old puts a thing in there with some, his black kid, it turns out to be his buddy that he had a falling out with, puts in slave for sale, the kid's picture, and Craigslist grabs it. If you and I were to put, you know, a 100 or 200 word economic dissertation into Craigslist and pay for the ad, they'd probably say we don't want it. I don't get it. I mean, I'm just ranting a little bit.
Well, yeah, but you know, you have an entire group, all 535 of those guys sitting over there in Congress, guys and gals, they could give a wet, you know what about this?
Yeah,
and that even includes the people that have made a big noise about it over the years. During the crash, when all this stuff started and got crazy, Ron Paul supposedly, you know, audit the Fed, you know, stop this nonsense, right? This is what he'd say in public. When the Fed started buying Fannie and Freddie paper, that was a blatantly illegal act. And it's illegal because the Fed is not allowed to buy anything that doesn't have the full faith and credit of the United States federal government behind it.
By the way, they started buying mortgages last week.
But on the face of every one of their prospectuses is the language. It says this is not backed by saying. Now, later, of course, they changed all that, right? Because yeah. Then the Treasury came in and bailed them out.
But
at the time they were doing it, this was illegal. And he got faxed by me, and literally his office called me and told me to stop faxing him.
Why did the Fed start buying mortgages again last week at a huge pace?
Yeah, you know, and how are they doing that? Because it's still illegal.
I know. Hey, one quick question before we let you go, and John, if you can opine as well. Other than political contributions, which should be in a pack, how exactly does Nancy Pelosi or Dick Durbin or one of the Republican guys, how do you make $10 million in Congress?
You come up with some sweetheart deal that your kid gets involved in because you know about it in advance, and he makes 1,000 times his money, like Hillary Clinton in her cattle futures trades.
Yeah, but if my kid was Matt Weber, how does that get to me? He wouldn't give it to me.
Well, you know, your kid's just going to have to set up a blind LLC and gee, you're one of the people on the board.
Well, one of the guys that John knows very well, one of my buddies from Notre Dame, was a very politically connected lawyer. When we first got out of school, when I first started on the floor, he told me that the guys that really had a rough time were guys that were like representatives. I mean, there was one of the guys in my area, was a guy named Marty Russo, nice guy. He goes, Marty was way behind his law school class that had gotten into good firms and had gotten jobs, and were all like 35. He said, all those guys are in country clubs. He's not. He has two houses. At that time, you made $25,000 a year. When he had his little PAC spot or his campaign fund, but he didn't make any dough. I mean, there's no way Marty made $1 million a year or $2 million or $3 million. How did all that change? I mean, I understand some people write books and so forth, but not all of them. How does Nancy Pelosi make $50 million? Or Dick Durbin or all these guys? I have no idea the mechanism. I understand if I send him a contribution that goes into his campaign fund, but it doesn't go to Dick Durbin personally. How the hell is the guy?
Well, no, it's illegal for him to take it out and spend it on his own, you know, going around doing hookers and blow or whatever.
I know. So my point is, how do those guys get the dough in there personally?
Because there are enough loopholes where they can cut special deals. You look at all the stuff that went on with Hunter Biden in the Ukraine, and if you think that is one group or it's just Democrats or just Republicans, you have been smoking too many of those legal bong hits over Michigan.
Speaking of which, we'll definitely let you go here. I've said it three times now. It happened to me again yesterday, John. I drove through Hubbard's Cave, and the window opened in the car, and then when I got to the other end, I go, what the hell, did I just smoke a doob in here? The entire Hubbard Cave smells like marijuana. I mean, everybody, what, five out of six cars and their guys were smoking them?
Probably.
My local health club yesterday, I walked through the parking lot just on the way to a store, and two people getting out of their car, the cloud of pot smoke coming out of both cars knocked me flat. And now they're going into the health club. So.
Well, you got to work out after doing a doob. We know that.
Right.
Anyway, Carl, thank you very much, buddy. As usual, good stuff. Talk to you soon, and have a nice Thanksgiving.
Yep. Thank you, too.
Jan, so what do you think? Carl and I, all we do is we open up a lot of questions, and actually might have a solution or two, but why does nobody care?
Well, you know, I think there's the media has really taken a hands off approach to this stuff, and that's sort of following their directions. That's where their money is coming from too. And I remember my dad telling me an anecdote one time that you would never see an article in any newspaper in a big city about an injury that occurred on an escalator in a local department store. You know, LSAers in Indianapolis, Marshall Fields in Chicago, and those things happened all the time. But the newspapers never would run a story like that because they were told by their higher-ups, don't hurt business. That's an advertiser in this paper. You're not going to get anywhere by exposing negligence or stupidity on the part of one of our biggest supporters here. So you just keep that stuff out. And I think everybody, recognized that and kind of understood it and looked the other way about it. But now it happens on a huge scale. So you got, media being paid to look the other way about much bigger stuff. And as a result, no wonder they can sell these crazy narratives to people. Where else are you going to get any credible information from that says there's anything different? So.
Well,
the thing I just learned about Nancy Pelosi, to return to her for a minute, Gavin Newsom, the former San Francisco mayor, now governor, is either her nephew or nephew-in-law, married into the family, Pelosi's husband, Pelosi's brothers, all these people are moneymakers, whatever, mob figures, however you want to classify them, going back several generations. And I don't know how many people in California really know that, and I don't know how many people would have not voted for Newsom knowing that anyway. But the fact that this is something so obvious and yet so carefully hidden so that most people don't know about it tells me a lot about how this money is being made. And it's this networking across many levels of state and national government, and everybody is benefiting from it as long as they keep their mouths shut.
Well, some of it is done so secretly, obviously, in Chicago. It's how to even come up with a bit. I mean, where was the auction? where was this? I mean, if you it takes you years, of sticking your nose where people don't want it, and maybe you don't want to put it, to where you even know where, like, a real estate auction is or something like that, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not like it's, and then when you'll get the Tribune once in a while, and it'll be, 30 pages of public notices. Well, who the hell has a stamp? This from being in the business you were in with the title and trust companies and so forth. Who has a staff to read every single one of those things?
Right.
I bet there's
proofreading it or anything else.
I'll bet there's three or four firms in Chicago that actually do have the staff and do read the damn thing, the whole thing. They know that there's a equipment auction someplace, you can go out there and buy a bulldozer for 5 cents on the buck, where you and I would probably have been there if we knew anything about bulldozers, I guess. But what I'm saying, the whole thing is designed to only have a few people participate.
Right.
And it's very difficult to deal with. And I think
we were talking about tax sales, a couple programs ago. Scavenger sales or the annual tax sale where they try to get, delinquent taxes paid up or get somebody to invest and collect interest on the debt, and hopefully return the property to the owner. If not, the tax buyer walks away from it. But I was told by people many, many years ago that is the most closed system around, because if they don't know who you are and you just went in and wanted to bid on a property, even if it was your next door neighbor's house and you wanted to get the property, you know, at a good rate and take care of it and everything else, you would be seen as an outsider. Nobody ever heard of you before, and they would just bid you out of the room. They would do everything they could to make sure you never showed up again.
Is this
how an auction is supposed to work, but, you know, that's how that auction works. So,
John, is this just human nature? Quick story, I'll keep it brief, but talk about the exact same thing. My nephew and niece decided, this is long before Storage Wars got on TV, right? I just bought this pretty heavy-duty pickup because my parents both died. We were cleaning out the house and so forth. Plus, I had never been to Tucson, so I flew down and bought this pickup and drove it back. And so we get in the, well, we called it Land Pirates, but it was essentially Storage Wars. And every one of these places, there's a lot of people that, for whatever reason, die or something, and they never pay their locker fee. And there's a notice someplace, buried God knows where. But every week or two, every one of these big places has an auction for four or five spots. And people show up, and there are rules. You know, they cut the lock, you open the thing, everybody gets like 1 second to look in. Now, you could look in and see a motorcycle, and we never did that, but, or might just see a wall of boxes, you have no idea what's in there. So you get 1 second, and you start bidding. And if you go to these things a few times, the same people kind of show up, because you really do need a staff. I mean, it's a big operation.
Yeah.
I'm going to say you need to do it right, because some of these guys are buying two and three of these lockers a day. Some of the lockers are the size of a single, you know, a single car garage. So, I mean, you got to get all the stuff out of there in 24 hours, you know, literally, because they don't want the owner coming back while you're in the middle of doing it. And you have to know right away what's junk, what isn't, where you can dump the stuff. And you can't just dump it. You might get away once or twice dumping it someplace, but if you're going to do this for a living, you got to have a place to dump it. You got to have a place to take it. You got to have a place to clean it up. You got to have a place to put it on eBay. You probably need a stall at the Swap-O-Rama or something. Remember, it's a big deal. So we go one place and we finally bid on something, and I bid like, you know, $200 for this thing. And so I win, and there's this lady who, you know, used to be a looker, but you're getting a little long in the tooth, and she says, you want to pay, like, credit card? I said, no, I just pay cash. And she goes, by the way, what are you even doing here? And I said, well, my nephew and niece, you know, they're looking for something to do during the summer. They've done a lot of summer jobs. I think maybe we can make a few bucks, and they have their own business and learn how to notice how much we paid, just how much we sold stuff, just how many hours we spent, you know, what we should be looking to buy, you know, what's good to sell, those kinds of things. A lot to learn there. She goes, well, you know, there was a guy here. I'm surprised they let you buy something. I said, they didn't exactly let me. I'm giving you the $200, right? And she goes, well, there's another dude here that if he was here, just somebody knew, he'd never let you buy anything. I said, you know what? I trained on the trading floor for 19 years. Every crowd you could never break into. You know what? I broke into like four or five of them before the OEX came along. I didn't give that level of detail. I said, you know, I just walk in and I'm not leaving. And after a week, you're just the new guy. You know, I mean, I said, you know, those guys are tougher than these guys. I'm worried about these schmucks. you know, but anyway, we're going to break here. John, come right back. SP futures up 650. NASDAQ futures up 24.75. Individual stocks in the Dow Boeing up $1.50. They keep thinking they're going to have this thing in the air by the end of the year, but end of the year is looking pretty close to me. Apple up $1.08. American Express up 44 cents. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. We had Carl earlier. We have David a little bit, David Vandelman. John, we sent out this thing to Carl. And I don't know, man, did you send it out to the rest of the people, this article regarding the good jobs versus bad jobs? Did we send that out, or are we going to?
I sent it to you, but we can retweet. It was sent to us by a listener. Joe Barry on Twitter sent it to us, and it's an interesting article, and I just sent it to you. I can tweet it out right now, though.
I mean, why don't you? Because it's you know, it's kind of longer, and I don't want to go through and read the whole thing, but it's somewhat interesting, John, in the sense that we're talking about the It's quality, and a lot of, I think what a lot of I don't necessarily look at it this way, even though I should mentally, and this is really a fault, because I read this stuff all the time and listeners send this stuff in. I keep forgetting, and again, this is a fault, I keep forgetting that this is not our time when we were younger, when somebody said they were making $9 an hour, $15 an hour, $8 an hour. You immediately multiplied it by 40 per week, and you calculate what the guy or lady's making in a year. And I absolutely, even though it's been slapped upside my head 100 times, I still do that. And from what this article is telling me again, you big dummy, you shouldn't do that. Because a lot of the problem now is, you know, the Walmarts of the world, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that they're alone. If you talk to somebody at a Walmart, they will tell you it's not so much the how much I make, even though it's not what I'd like to be making. It's the idea that they'll say on a Thursday, well, it's been real slow all week, you know, don't come in tomorrow, type of thing. You're not guaranteed the 2,080 hours a year is what, you know, it used to, isn't that how many hours are in a year?
And no benefits, you know, too.
Well, too.
So you, and, I mean, all of that is, that translates to me to be a pretty bad job.
Well, yeah. So I mean,
you're not even working, you know, as much as you'd like to. So that to me is a definition of a bad job. If you're not let work and they're not paying you and that there's work there.
Well, even if you say to yourself, okay, at this level, it's enough for me to get, you know, a studio apartment, take care of the car, you know, eat ramen noodles, and if I can do something on a Saturday here and there, then I can have a little spending money or whatever. But then if the guy goes, all right, don't come in on a Friday, now where does that leave you when it comes rent day?
That's right.
I mean, you can't even do the math.
That climate has made things like Uber and Lyft possible, because those people, if they ever had good jobs, and I assume they all did at one point, they're old enough, they don't have those good jobs anymore, and their idea of a job now is to go out and hustle fares, you know, the way cab drivers did, and that used to be a good job at one time too. But to me, it's like, you know, you're using your own car, you're, you know, putting your own gas in it, you're giving a huge amount of your revenue to the higher ups and taking very little of it for yourself, and you give the impression of being employed, and you certainly feel like you're employed because you're running yourself ragged, but maybe you are working 40 hours or 50 hours some week, but you don't have anything really to show for it the way somebody would have had in the past if you were on the clock for 40 or 50 hours.
And some
of those people are professionals. They're, you know, people who have lots of good working years ahead of them, and they're wasting their energy in this.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, you look at the amount of, well, this, in this article, I'll find it, but it's a long article. The amount of jobs, I mean, it's, totally service industries, healthcare and service of some kind, right? And it's, and you know, the manufacturing stuff, we were actually making things. Not that, you know, we all got to work in a steel mill, I mean, because that, you know, that stuff's not coming back to that extent. But still, you wonder there, if you're not really providing that much value. I mean, how do you run a cleaners for somebody if nobody works? What do you need to give up clean for? At some point. And it's called a service industry because you're servicing people that are doing something. If they're not doing it, I mean, how many diners and cleaners and all that stuff do you need in a town where the factory just left?
Well, I see people around here in my neighborhood who seem to thrive, or they, you know, survive on Grubhub. You know, I never see them carrying groceries in, but I see a Grubhub driver there, you know, two, three, no more than two times a day usually, but I think, well, there's service for you. I mean, now you got intermediaries running your food around, and I see Grubhub people on the L running pizzas and stuff, and I think, well, there's a whole level of service employment that you would have laughed at 30, 40 years ago as being viable or something that is desirable, that all these people are, you know, are running around taking other people their food. What does that do to the price of food? What does it do to traffic? What does it do to just, you know, your general sense of how healthy the country is? There's something wacky and off-putting about it to me. And yet these people must need these jobs because, you know, at least it is a job. They can say they're employed. But really, are they employed? I mean, the way you and I think you're employed, I don't know.
One of the lady who tends bar at Maddie and my local watering hall, the Tripoli Tap, she's, I'm thinking she's been in that service industry forever with, you know, all the good things and warts to show for it. She was telling me, you know, Chief, I was hungry the other day, so I, like, ordered a sandwich. I said, you did what? this is such a different generation to me. I don't even, well, you don't have, like, anything in the house? Well, no, I don't have anything in the house. I'm hungry. I usually eat at work. And all of a sudden, I've got a day off or something, and I'm hungry. And I called Grubhub and send me a, you know, sausage sandwich this place or a burger. I said, you don't even like a can of tuna fish in the place or a can of soup? No, I got nothing. I'm like, okay. So if you need a sandwich, you know, you can't walk down the block and grab, oh, why? I got to deliver it. You know, I'm like, the first place that did that, and they're gone now, was, remember, way up on Sheffield, Maddie, with the Leona's? You remember that place still being
there? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those guys did, they were the first people, maybe not countrywide, but they were the first people to deliver anything as the younger people started to move up there. They were doing $2 million in carryout in like 1978 or something. Literally, if you wanted a beef sandwich for $4, they'd deliver it. And now they don't even do that. I mean, they're not there. They left. But mean, it was, you know, when people are stuck in a place, a lot of people don't have cars.
Yep.
It's a different world.
I think that's a big part of it, Tom. Car ownership has become a luxury for people, you know, and it used to be the norm. You know, first thing you do is get a car loan if you had a job, and you'd use that for your, you know, travel and commuting maybe, and it was convenient to have a car. Now, with the price of cars and the average, you know, number of hours people are working, I don't see cars as sustainable or justifiable things for people, which fuels the Grubhub phenomenon and the Uber phenomenon and other things too. It's divided up between people who are hanging on with their cars and the people who just decided that's not for me, and I'll make use of somebody else's car and pay them to do.
Well, if you move downtown and you have a family in the burbs like I did, then you're gonna have a car. Of course, I mean, because right. I would never, like I said, I never take an Uber or a Lyft. I mean, it's plus, you know, Audrey lives in Orland. You go out there, you can't do anything without a car. I mean, basically.
Right.
I mean, but I mean, I thought years ago, my first trip to New York was, God, if I ever moved out here, I don't have any family, but why would I need a car? You know, I mean, it was a New York phenomenon. What, Jack Benny never had a driver's license? Right? He's like, I live in New York, what do I need a driver's license for? You know, I mean, that was a whole phenomenon if you're in, you know, the New York phenomenon. Why, if you lived in Manhattan, what possible reason would you have to have a car? Unless you had, you know, family in Jersey, went to see them every weekend or something like that. You know, and then Chicago, downtown. I think it comes down to, Jan, if we would have left right out of college and got a job in the center of a major city, London, New York, maybe San Francisco. Although San Francisco, you'd probably want to enjoy California on the weekends. You'd want to have some way of getting out of there. But, you know, what do you need it for? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, even if I moved to Chicago just myself for 6 months to a year, unless, you know, you can rent them. If you want to go out to the forest preserves or see the area, or, you know, go down to Michigan City for the weekend, you can rent them cheap enough. I mean, it's not like you definitely need one, but all of this phenomenon, you know, to kind of get back to what we were talking about, what exactly in the economy, you see things change, and you see people tell you what's right or wrong or about the thing, and you see people's, well, I'll give you an example. You were mentioning about the, escalators, right?
Yeah.
Now why is nobody, this is now 4 days now since they came out with this bid, why is nobody on CNBC, since they're both big advertisers, I believe, or have been at various times, saying this Schwab TD Ameritrade combination basically sucks? There is no reason for that. Are we going to have, let's see, let's get down to two banks, two brokerage firms. Is that the direction we want? There is no reason for two places that have $2.5 trillion in assets, they have to get together to save money. Save money? What are we talking about?
Yeah, I know. It's insane.
I mean, why has nobody even mentioned that antitrust should look at this? Why? I mean, we have an industry that's gone from, you know, several thousand market makers to like three or four. You know, shouldn't somebody sit down and say, wait a minute, we've seen this industry consolidate to this extent. Can there be a committee, people on both sides of the aisle, and say, look at what's going on in the financial industry. Is this been a positive or a negative? Why don't we find out first?
Somewhere along the line, transparency became the enemy or the bugaboo in a lot of businesses, and that to me is just, you know, there's something morally wrong about not wanting to know important things like this, or assuming that there's people who deserve to know this and other people who don't, and somebody makes those distinctions and everybody else has to go along with them.
Or if it's an advertiser, maybe. I don't know, maybe it's the advertising piece.
Yeah, however it plays out, people accept it, and they don't know what they don't know, which is always scary of you, because when you do get blindsided by it, you know, later on it's too late to do anything about it, and you're completely powerless anyway, so it's a double whammy for the people who are victimized by it. But you see it's so many things that just ripen into horror stories, but if they had been covered as they should have been early on, people knew about it, it could have been mitigated or stopped somehow. And instead, you know, these things turn into fiscal disasters. And then it's too late. The SNL crisis, I mean, the news of that was held off until the day after the 1988 election because of Bush's son, who was one of the prime movers in it. Had we known about it, a couple years before that, probably a Bush would not have been elected, but we might have also staved off some of the real pain of that collapse. Instead, you know, the news was held off, and everybody then just saw a huge avalanche of disaster, financial disaster coming down the pike. And, you know, that's most people don't even know that happened now. So we've moved on to other things that are being hidden or distorted. Or
ask anybody under the age of 50 what the SNL disaster was and the Resolution Trust, which could have been one of the most crooked things this country's ever done, except maybe as much as 2008 where the banks got bailed out and the people in the houses didn't.
Right.
Sort of same deal. But, you know, that was a... You know, I guess I don't understand the connection between, and Maddie Weber and I are always, you know, jousting about this a little bit. In an era where news moves as fast as it does now, some people would say that people's access to news is greater than it's ever been. And to a certain extent, there's no doubt about that. If I want to do research and something regarding, like I did last weekend, it's pouring rain at my house, so I spent 2 hours going through, pricing numbers of colleges and so forth. I can only imagine, Jen, 30 years ago, what I would have had done to do that. I have to get my ass out of my place in the pouring rain, over to the L stop, go downtown, go to the library, spend a day trying to find all this information, maybe, if I could even find it, because I was never that good at that. And now it's pretty much at my fingertips. But also, the truth is elusive.
Yep.
You know, and seemingly it gets even more and more elusive the more and more people use the word transparency. As soon as somebody invented that term, things have gotten less transparent, or is it just me? But I don't know how you, there's less reporters. Like you say, there's no really, I don't understand why there isn't an economy column with somebody like a Carl Denninger writing it once a week in the New York Times or something. Does nobody want to hear it? I don't think anybody could talk me into saying that today Mike Royko would get a job. I think he would not, nobody would want him anywhere.
Oh, yeah. He'd be like, you know, Kaepernick. He'd be at the lightning rod. Nobody would want to take on that kind of risk of just getting his name in the headlines instead of in front of his column. Doing something, getting a DUI or whatever. Poor Royko was in bad shape at the end. But in his heyday, I mean, he kind of set the trend. I mean, there's so many writers I can think of who were beholden to him, kind of following it.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's no place for somebody like that today at all.
Well, when you started out were guys that were on the city desk. Hey, there's a murder. I'll go out and cover it. I write a story about the murder. People got used to writing the truth about whatever it is they're writing about. And why should I tell a lie about a murder? I just wouldn't cover it.
Right.
I mean, what's the point? So you can say, now it's okay. Who am I going to offend? What's the editor going to like? I mean, I don't think anybody can get any kind of money for an investigative thing, going undercover like Walter Jacobson used to do. I think Royko, on a personal level, I think when his wife died, he sort of lost it.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, she, didn't she die suddenly? I mean,
and it was, the love of his life.
Yeah.
He was never the same after that. He remarried, I believe. But he was just, he was a bitter, unhappy guy after that.
Maybe the second wife wasn't as good as the first wife. Just saying, you never know what who knows what it could have done, because he made a lot of money in Boss, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And that book has really stood the test of time. It's a great book. I mean, that's a history like nobody else, nobody would write today, probably, and live to tell about it.
No. Well, you ever read it, Manny?
No.
It's, it's one of those things. It's an old book. If you read it today, you'd swear you're reading today's news.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because I go back and read old articles by Royko, and I feel like they could have been written today, almost across the board.
Well, it actually had to be every alderman and who he was involved with and this and that and who he was tied in with, just like we're talking about the Pelosi thing. This guy, his uncle was this guy, his uncle's that guy, and this guy ran, the paving company in the 14th Ward that got every... I mean, the strings... Like wander down the middle of the street, don't they? And you wonder, at some point, you can keep it. There were studies when I was at the University of Chicago. George Stigler did a lot of these studies because he was a a government economist, and there was a time when people actually thought that the, and I'm not so sure they were wrong, John, but maybe even know what the civil service system is, was?
I don't know.
Well, it was a deal where there were like tests for everything. So even to be a janitor, you had to take a janitor's test. And I mean, I think policemen and firemen, nobody uses the term anymore, but they're still considered civil service, right?
Oh yeah, they had exams.
Yeah,
and they still do. I mean, to some, but you also need a degree and all this other stuff too. But yeah, there are all these the PACE exam, all these civil service exams to hire at the federal level, and it was a meritocracy to some extent. The test scores dictated whether you got an interview or not.
But once you got in, you essentially were, I'll say, protected from the political system. I mean, you had your
right.
So you were essentially a union member before there were unions. I mean, if you were a civil service janitor, somebody couldn't really fire you unless you had passed your test, you had not had any bad reviews. I mean, you essentially gained, I won't say power, but you gained some protection, right, Janet?
Right. It was a species of like academic tenure.
Yeah.
That you were insulated from the vagaries of who was, politically in control or what party was in control or whatever else. That was supposed to not affect you.
Right, and some plan, and then there was the competition, for lack of a better term, to that was the patronage system. Your guy got in, you got hired. And actually, in Chicago was kind of a blend of the two, right, Jan?
Yes.
And,
yes.
But most of the people felt at the end of the day that the patronage system was as efficient as the civil service system, or sometimes even more so. But but you were also, when you set the time was when you had a manufacturing city, you had a lot of people making reasonable money. I won't say a lot of money, but enough, surely enough to live on, and nobody cared if say your long lost brother, not that your brother needs it because he's a high end chef. Your long-lost brother needed a job, Maddie. You'd go over to the alderman and say, look, my brother here, Jen, sorry to use your name, Jen, he's kind of a dum-dum, but, we got to get him something. Well, you might find out that he's a bridge tender or something 2 months from now, or he's doing something for Streets and Sand. He's driving a guy. So, I mean, they were kind of low-end jobs, but they, he would get a job based on his, they used the word Chinaman, right? That was the word, Jen?
Yep.
And I mean, who's your Chinaman? They'll get you the spot, And to a certain extent, it wasn't all that inefficient, really.
Well, it kind of when you say it was a blend, that's absolutely right. Because my understanding was, in the civil service system, you'd get say 10 points added to your test score if you were a veteran or if you had other national
right.
service, whatever, and it kind of gave you a chance to rise to the head of the line of people. Depending on what your history was, exclusive of your test score. And the patronage system, you got so many points added if you were so-and-so's brother-in-law.
Right.
There was a kind of building onto a merit system of sorts, and it did kind of guarantee that in certain jobs, there were qualified people who, had competed to some extent for the job, but had things that sweetened the pot for them because they knew somebody or were related to somebody, and that was the deal clincher.
Well, that was.
But it wasn't like they were just picked out of a crowd and slapped down and like Hunter Biden and given $83,000 a month to know nothing.
Right.
So,
well,
that was not the way the patronage system worked.
But you know what's interesting about the Hunter Biden thing is he was on a board, right?
Yeah.
But look at the boards in this country. And I mean, we're singling him out, and yet, what was Senator Phil Graham's, what was his wife's name? Wendi Graham. She was on the board of Enron, right?
Right.
And she was in charge of what the people behaving. What do they call that on the board? The not compensation committee, but the. Now, it is an ethics committee, but there's another name for it, and she's the one who got the law passed through her hubby that said the regulators, not that regulators do a good job at this stuff, the regulators couldn't touch people that traded the physical versus the futures, and they traded physical instead of trading futures on power, they traded over the counter, which was the physical, right? So they were immune from regulation. And he got that thing passed because she was on the board of Enron. Now you look, Kissinger was on the board. Who was she was attractive, Manny, not that I remember. The blonde.
Or noticed.
Yeah, or the who was the blonde babe who was Senator's daughter that had, what was it? It wasn't the EpiPen, was it? Or was it the EpiPen?
Oh.
It was something, she was one of those drugs that they raised the price of something, and she was in front of Congress, and, you know, the thing used to be $6, and it was like $200, and her old man was the senator, and, wasn't Kissinger was on that board? He's like 96, and was it Colin Powell or some other, you know, some general? The board was loaded with people making all this money, doing God knows what. They even come to a, I mean, if you look around, look how many minority people are on like 8 boards. Just because right. they're a minority. I mean, I'm not saying they're not smart, but I mean, nobody can handle 8 boards. I don't care who you are. I mean, Solomon couldn't be actually do a good job on 8 boards. You're getting paid on all 8 of them. I mean, it's, you know, so the idea that Hunter Biden is on this board making this money, the whole idea is to put people that might have influence on boards. I mean, you think big Jim Thompson? He was on the board of the Board of Trade. How much do you think he made there? Think he cared about corn options?
Just having his name associated with it was important.
And I'm sure the people in Ukraine felt that having the son of a vice president of the U.S. having their board is a good idea. I mean, right? I mean, it's not like that happened all
the time. It showed you had the cachet and the connections to make that appointment happen, and that implied, you know, there's somebody in this company who knows what it's going to take to get what we want in a tight spot.
Right.
When we need the U.S. for something, we've got somebody here who can get right to the top immediately.
Well, or somebody he'll know who to call.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that he can necessarily deliver.
Right.
But it'd be different than you and me calling our congressman.
It's like, you know, a power play in a card game. That you've got the goods when you need them, and that puts off your opposition or your competition. They figure you have something there. Whether you really have a close communication or not doesn't really matter. You're presumed to have enough of a connection that it can help you when you need the help.
So. Plus, I'll guarantee you he'll never vote against a raise for the guys up top.
Right.
Jan, take care of yourself. Have a good Thanksgiving. Maybe I'll see you over the holiday.
To you and yours, too. Thanks, Tom.
SP Futures up 750, NASDAQ Futures up 2750. Come back. We're talking markets. Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. On Rope Stocks and Jocks, I'm Tom Out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 775 now. They were there last night, the exact same number. NASDAQ futures up 30. Town of the week we'll probably have with the operative word there being probably in a holiday week. Sometimes you're at a spot in the morning and you're there at the close. S&P futures say up 750, NASDAQ up 27, Dow up 73. Over in Europe, we've got rallies here as well. DAX up 64, mentioned not as much as they were last time we looked. DAX up 64.5%. FTSE up 66.9. They were up over a percent the last time we looked. CAC around up 24.4%. Over in Asia, the rallies there as well. Nikkei up 179.8%. Shanghai up 20.7%. Hang Seng up 397.5%. They had a stand down on the demonstrations in Hong Kong for the elections, correct? Because they didn't want to interfere with the elections, I believe. That's right. A 10-year yield 1.78. The Bund minus 0.35. Japan minus 0.09. So they've been kind of stuck there after looking like they were all going up. They just flattened out. Silver down 16 cents, 1684, under 17 again. Gold down $8, 1455. We keep thinking that there's going to be some kind of phase one deal, which would take some of the risk trade off, but, copper up, half a cent, 265, still going nowhere. We've got oil now up 8 cents, 5785. Brent up 12, 6351. Natural gas, actually down a dime, 256 is, I'm sure Maddie will tell you, our forecasts are getting a little, more pleasant, shall we say. RBOB 166. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, and sports, Manny?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the south side. Route 394 southbound at the Bishop Ford is experiencing a slowdown because the left lane is blocked due to that crash and the cleanup at the Bishop Ford split on the southbound 394. So keep that in mind on the south side. No issues coming in on the Ryan or I-57. Normal traffic volumes there. Same for the Stevenson and Eisenhower, though building steadily on the Ike. Kennedy is moving slowly in both directions, but nothing out of the norm. Same for the Edens. Suburban tollways are relatively quiet. Looks like no other major issues to report at this hour, so that's good news. Weather today, more good news. We'll end up being partly cloudy and mild today, a high of 52. Right now it's overcast and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 70 today. Right now it's clear and 48. In sports, the Bears improved to 5-6 on the season, winning at home yesterday versus the New York Giants 19-14. Sunday night football, it was the 49ers blowing out the Packers 37-8. In hockey, Blackhawks were off, Coyotes were in action, they lost to the Oilers 4-3 in a shootout. NBA, Bulls were off, they'll host the Trailblazers tonight at the United Center, that's a 7 p.m. Chicago time tip. Suns lost to the Nuggets 116-104. And lastly, both Arizona teams were in action in college hoops yesterday. Arizona blew out Long Beach State 104-67. Arizona State lost a tough one to Virginia 48-45. Chief.
Just so you know, it is possible for me to do a little bit of research. David, how are you?
I'm fine.
The lady we're talking about is Elizabeth Holmes. She was not a senator's daughter, but...
Never heard of her.
She's the head of the Theranos, the blood testing company. That they had a new blood testing trick,
right.
And of course it didn't...
It was going to revolutionize testing methods or something.
Yeah, and the people on the board were, let's see, Henry Kissinger, James Mattis, the general, George Shultz. God, how old is George Shultz? Is he 100? But the family tree is all people with nothing but dough. And you know when your old man is, what was the guy's name? Something the fourth, Matty. Now, if your dad was Matt Weber the fourth, and you were like the fifth, I guarantee you, you'd be like a senator or something. Just now.
Or a king.
Why don't you change your
name? I'd rather be a king.
Why don't you change your name to Matt Weber to like the sixth or something?
I could, but there's no Matt Webers before me that I'm related to.
See, there's where you go. You're being an honest man. Who cares? Who's going to check?
Just throw a six at the end of my name?
Well, yeah, six might be a lot. Maybe go with a third.
It'd be tough if they all they had to do is research who my dad was, and they would know I wasn't even the second, and that would be a problem.
Well, no.
I could be the sixth because that could match, you know, my average score in a hole in golf.
There you go.
See, now, Matty doesn't even understand how this works. You can tell he's from Iowa, for God's sake. If your dad,
but I'd write down five.
If your dad's name was Matt Weber,
which it isn't,
which you would be Matt Jr.
Correct.
But if you're like your great grandfather and one of your uncles was Matt Weber, you could be the third.
Thank you. Thank you for explaining that to me.
You didn't know that.
Of course I knew that. Well, I mean, what are you talking about?
You said, I'm saying your dad doesn't make any difference.
No, I know that, but I'm saying that the tree ends right there. So it.
Your dad doesn't have a father?
No. What are you missing here? I said if I put Matt Weber the sixth, all it would take is research of the father, and that would end it right there.
Well, how do you know that there weren't back three or four generations a couple other Matts?
It's got to be a string.
You're sure?
Yes.
You go being honest again.
Well, no, that's just the way it is.
Ah, all right. Well, that's okay.
Once it's broken, it's broken. You don't get to continue just because 10 generations ago there was a Matt Weber. You're not Matt Weber the second.
Okay.
Or junior, or the third, or the fourth.
All right, well, I think you should do that and put a letter in front of your name.
That's a good one. That's one of my favorites. I'm J. Matt Weber.
Yeah. Well, who was the guy who just, Michael J. Fox took his name from, was it Michael J. Pollard, who just died the other day? Remember what he was? He was in a bunch of movies. Character actor, but his by far most famous role. He was the third guy in Bonnie and Clyde. And one of I listened to it yesterday on News Radio 78, one of those classic lines, if you can find it, Matty, in Bonnie and Clyde was when Faye Dunaway says, "What's your name, boy?" He's like, "Michael J. Pollard. What do you guys do?" "Well, my name's, you know," what was her name? Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow? Was that the names? I believe. Because I'm Bonnie Parker and he's Clyde Barrow and we rob banks. You like want to come with us? Sure. And he opted. Like, I mean, was that one of the classic scenes ever in film, though, David?
Yeah.
How about that for recruitment?
I saw the 3+ hour extravaganza of the Irishman about, you know, the bodyguard of Jimmy Hoffa. That was a Martin Scorsese film with Pacino and De Niro. It was pretty much of a classic.
It was good?
Long, though. Very, very long.
It debuts on Netflix in 2 days, on the 27th. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be watching it this week. It's been out in select theaters for a few weeks, but it's going to be on Netflix here in 2 days.
One of my gnomes tells me that the new Midway is really good, too. Now, we're getting in a market here in a second.
By the way, you got the names right. It is Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow.
Well, yeah.
Nice work.
We've turned into a movie review show.
Well, no. Well, I mean, my question for Mr. Weber, because he's in Mr. Of course, you're not as young as you used to be. Did they do this? I'm thinking of Midway. I'm going to guess they did the whole movie without any planes. It's all done on computer and so forth. When they did the first one, they actually you know, with Charlton Heston, those guys in it, they actually used planes. I mean, they dug them out of wherever they were, or made planes that looked like the planes that were there. I'm thinking how you could do one of these whole movies without even a plane, right?
I mean, I don't know. You'd have to. I assume you'd have to have some exterior.
A mock-up of some kind?
Yeah. I mean, but I don't know. I mean, you can do a lot with computers.
Yeah, I don't think you actually have to. You're right. You probably have to have a model of some kind, but I don't think you actually have to fly the damn thing.
Maybe not. Are you saying Charlton Heston was on a flying plane during the movie? I doubt it.
I don't know if he was, but I think they had planes in there that were flying.
It's possible. I think it's more likely they had planes in this one than they did in the original. That'd be my guess.
Well, 40 years ago, they actually probably had some.
Gilligan's Island wasn't even outside.
By the way,
it would be.
I saw the soundstage in the Universal. Never was outside.
I know, and I'm saying now it would be. I think they're more realistic now than they were back then.
Well, we'll have to check this out because, well, look at the new Star Wars. I mean, there's most of that's all just. I mean, the original one guys actually, you know, created the mock-ups and stuff, right? And then had drawings and all of it. Versus now, I don't know, but we should get somebody on as an expert because it really is fascinating. Anyway, David, speaking of fascinating, we're going to be up 7:75 all day, and then tomorrow we'll be up 5. And what is that? The week we got coming in front of us here.
Well, believe it or not, just a little correction, and I use a lot of quotes because it didn't seem like much, but the indexes are basically down 0.5%, not for last week, just because we went sideways and the like. And this is not a bullish comment, but it's just a comment. It relieved a lot of the extension in the price momentum oscillators. They're in neutral zones, although they're negatively aligned. And the market at this point always can do whatever it wants, but it's no longer extended to the point where, you know, even the 2-5% correction that I had mentioned and being frank, hoped for, you know, is necessarily all that likely.
I've got everybody this morning. I got every stock in the Dow that's trading pre-market. Every one of them's up, even though we're only up 7 points on the spools, 8 now.
You know what I've noticed? This is and this isn't, you know, go, you know, invest everything. But whenever you have Treasury note futures and 30-year bond futures down pre-market, and the yield curve is steepening, where the negative, you know, degree that bonds are down exceeds notes, the market is up at least for a couple 3 hours, probably 80-90% of the time. And that's the way it is today. Bonds are down like 10, notes are down 5, and the market's up. That doesn't mean necessarily we're going to go to the roof. But on the other hand, if you see the other situation where, let's say, 30-year bonds are up 10 and notes are up 5 and the futures are up, that's a sell-off.
I would agree. And I think it has to do, I don't want to beat this horse up a little bit too much, but then again, if it's the truth, which I think it is, I don't know. I think it totally has to do with the amount of dollars in the pool.
Yeah.
And it,
yeah. And there's not much new commitment, evidently, because even with the rally to highs in the three major indexes, there's not a lot of money being committed to the market.
Well, what I'm saying is the money keeps being poured in by central banks.
Right.
So they are going to all sort of move. You're going to have up and down days, but at the end of the day, if there's no news, if there isn't a Hong Kong problem, if there isn't a China deal off again, the general direction, I think, although slower, is up. And I the thing that several things concern me, but one of them is it seems like they need to put in more and more money to get the same result.
Right.
And it's, you know,
well, you're at higher prices, so it's going to take more money to buy the shares to push a bit more.
Well, that's true. I mean the math doesn't lie, but when I say that, it almost has to do, when you talk about bonds moving the same direction as stocks, moving the same direction as, you know, baseball teams and football teams and everything, it almost becomes not a question of the asset moving up, it's the dollar moving down. And people will immediately say, well, no, it's not moving down versus the euro or the Canadian or the yen. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the entire world amount of whatever you want to call them, world dollars is moving up. So in terms of your asset basing, it's very difficult, David. It's counterintuitive for most people, even if you've studied economics as long as I have. Every time there's a two-step transaction, a two-party transaction, and the price changes, even in a barter system, it could be one or the other changing, right? It doesn't have to be, I'll use the world's simple
situation. Right, it doesn't have to be both, right?
Right, I mean, in the world's simple situation of, all of a sudden, Maddie Weber and Thomas absolutely do not get along, and they're farmers right next to each other. Say Thomas owes him dough and he never paid him. I'm not saying that could ever happen. But so Maddie has cows. He's good at cows. Good at cows, or what the hell that means. He gets a lot of milk. And Thomas is a pretty good corn farmer. Even if they hate each other, probably Maddie's going to say, hey, look, I'll trade you, every week 5 gallons of milk for 50 bushels of corn or something, whatever the number comes out to be. And even if you don't like each other, it's a deal, to be done. Like the Salt One Agreement. Doesn't matter. It makes people easier. So all of a sudden, one week, Thomas says, hey, there's a, we had a drought last year, and guess what? The price of corn is now more dear than it was last year. Now, I can't give you 50 bushels. I can only give you 40 for the same 5 gallons of milk. You and I know, all we know is that the price changed. We don't know that the price of corn is actually going up, okay? It might be that all of a sudden everybody in the world gets just be good at a dairy farmer as Maddie Weber, and the milk might, the cows he used to give him 20 gallons a day are now giving him 30.
Right.
Or 25 or something because he got some new additive or whatever to put in the chow. So all of a sudden, Thomas might say, hey, look, 50 bushels of corn are not worth 5 gallons anymore. They're worth 6 or 7. But on the outside, we just know that the price changed. But in our lifetime, we think we're all trained. I mean, even some of the stuff I say where I'm supposed to know this stuff, I'll still, like I said earlier, I'm a blithering idiot when it comes to people's salary because I immediately multiply the per hour wait times 40. As many articles as I read saying that's not the problem. The problem is people are now 38, 32, 30, depending on the week. They can't even count on the money. So I'm saying, right now, people don't necessarily think that they'll always say the value of the Cubs went up from $800 million to $5 billion in 5 years. Instead of saying, no, really what's happened is the amount of money in the system has doubled. Maybe you and I aren't feeling it, but it's still in the system and it's popping out here. That actually, the amount of dollars has dropped, or the value of dollars have dropped vis-a-vis how many franchises you think in all major leagues? Maybe 100? 98 or something? Basketball, football, basketball, football, hockey and baseball, it's got to be what, like 120?
120 what?
Major sport franchises.
Yeah, around there, yep.
Yeah, around there.
So 32 in football, the others are 30, I believe.
Yeah, so we're pretty close. We're being near spot
122.
I knew you'd know better than me. So it might just be that they haven't changed, and yet the value of the dollar's chasing them over the last 4 years. There's been the money supply is 4 times bigger in the last 20 years. Maybe it's the dollar that's actually gone down. Right? So,
Yeah.
But how do you even go about thinking like that on a daily basis? And what good is it to you? None, really, right? It doesn't really matter. You've got the dollar in your pocket. You don't realize.
No, I get what you're saying. It's money flow, and And I mean, hey, back when, I mean, and still to an extent, you'd look at crude versus heating oil versus unleaded gas, and calculate the crack spreads and decide whether the commercials, wanted the product, and as opposed if it was profitable to the crude or not. If they take the crude because the energy products weren't profitable, or feeder cattle and corn and the feeding spreads to the live cattle. So I mean, there were calculations that could be made to see the components of process of the mix. But now anymore, like you said, you don't really necessarily know.
Well, and it's hard to have somebody think that way. Because most of the time, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, you're paying for something with the $20 in your pocket, and if something went up, it doesn't do you any good to say, well, actually, the reason why this is now 21 is because the dollar is now worth 10% less or 5% less. I mean, because it really doesn't matter. Because the only thing that we have to value stuff is dollars. I mean, once in a while, I'll say something like, okay, the price of gold in the U.S. has fallen, but guess what? Compared to the yen, the price of the dollar versus the yen has gone up so much that actually if you got a yen, if you have a if you're holding money in yen, the price of gold is actually up.
Right.
You know, and it's, I guess it's not, you know, it's not something you want to focus on because it drives you nuts, but it, when you look at something, did the price of the Cubs really go up 6 times in 10 years or not? You know, did the price of a, you know, hospital visit really double in 10 years or the stock market? You know, that's one possibility. Or it could be that the thing you're valuing it by, because clearly the cost of a share of IBM, or I won't use IBM because it doesn't go anywhere, a share of Apple didn't go up. If you're pricing the Cubs basis on shares of Apple, guess what? They're even, right?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. That leads back into our argument, you know, over the last, whatever, 4 years, but especially the last 6 months, the effect of stock buybacks. You know, I mean, the multiples expanded, and the earnings have, you know, barely inched up, but the stock buybacks has led to just lower number of shares on the market. So if you want one, you have to pay up until you don't.
Well, it's a whole policy type thing. Before, and one of my, I had a, they didn't call it that, but it was essentially an accounting class that really got to, it was like advanced cost accounting, David. And in one of the toughest spots, we spent like 3 or 4 weeks on executive compensation. Mm-hmm. And how difficult it was to really put together a compensation plan to, I mean, hopefully you were hiring somebody that's innately honest and likes people and so forth, like a Matt Weddy Weber type. You can hire him and you hope that, you know, because of he has some kind of a moral fiber, his whole working day isn't to find loopholes in the compensation system so he can make more, right? But there are people it's sort of the way they are. And so when you would put this together, you would design a compensation system, and like we would have a quiz. Well, they didn't call them quizzes in grad school, but whatever. You'd publish this, and they would, you'd go up to the front of the class, and 15 people would absolutely tear it apart. You'd say, well, it's going to cause somebody to do this, well, somebody to do that. It's going exactly the opposite direction of what you want. And if you were to say, we're going to compensate Matty Weber based on stock prices, and we're going to give him options going forward, and we're going to put the options priced out this 3 or 5 year or whatever. You know, the stock is at 50. And by the way, 3 years from now, he's going to have 10,000 options at 60. And, you know, we're going to make it so that Matty is incented dramatically to have the stock price go up. Now, if you're a neophyte and a dum-dum, you might say, this is really a good plan. Well, if you were in this class, the first 8 hands would go up and say, all you've done is torpedo dividends forever.
Right.
Well, what do you mean? Well, every time you give a dividend, the stock price goes down, right? Well, yeah. Okay, so if you're paying $2 a year, you're never going to get to 60 in 3 years. But it doesn't mean that if you're paying people $2 for 3 years, that's $6, and the stock goes to like 59, that you haven't done an amazing job for people. The stock's up, you know, whatever, almost 20%. And, oh, by the way, you're paying, you know, a 5 or 6% dividend. I mean, that's pretty damn good, right?
Right.
And now the guy who's running the place says, well, it's not so good because I just got stuffed.
Right.
I got right to my strike price, and now it's not over. I want this stock to be at 70. Well, sure as hell ain't getting to 70 if I'm paying a dividend. So that's not going to happen. And surely if we have, like, a really good year, I'm not going to give you a dollar special dividend. I mean, remember when General Motors used to pay a special dividend every year?
Oh, yeah.
I remember happening.
One huge one from Microsoft.
Yeah. And I'm going to guess that one day, if you got the right board up there, they're going to say, you know what we should do? We should take this cash and buy the stock back. That'll get it over 60. I mean, right?
Right. Well, and that's happening all the time in the last 6 months.
And when you if you give board members the same thing, well, that's I use the term in the class I was in that would be considered cheating. That's not how you want to incent somebody to get the you want them to do everything proper in terms of obey the rules, you know, take care of labor, take care of everything, and you're doing such a good job that the stock will naturally appreciate because you're doing better every year than you did the year before. It sounds very simple, but to actually design that plan is really hard to do.
It's called financial engineering.
Yeah.
That's what we're experiencing.
And plus, it wouldn't happen if interest rates were 10% or 8%. You're never going to get the chairman to get the okay to go.
Yeah, well, how would Apple, with $145 billion in cash, float debt to buy back stock?
Wouldn't 8 or 10? Well, if John Deere, what did they get? David, you were telling me. They went 30 years, they get like 2.9% or 3 or some ridiculous number. And, there's no way they're going to use that to buy back stock if the number is 9%.
Right.
So what are you thinking? We're up 9.50 now. Are we just going to go up all week? I think
we'll probably, the day before holiday close, which is Wednesday, and the 4 days net after are net positive. Net positive doesn't mean you can't have down days. You know, probably 70% of the time. Although, believe it or not, even with Black Friday, a lot of that's discounted before. Thanksgiving is not one of the most reliable holidays to fit that pattern. So I think it'll be up and down more on the trade issues than anything. They'll monitor and see what Black Friday is. But, yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, as I said, just going sideways to slightly down last week relieved a lot of the technical extension. And for now, as much as I hate to say it, it looks like you just buy dips.
Yeah, I think you do too. David, thank you very much. Try and get you one more day this week because Thursday is we're obviously off. But everybody have a good Thanksgiving, and we don't see anybody till Thursday, but we'll be back tomorrow and Wednesday. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.